Chapter 92. Lysander, Graveyard of Tyrants.
Are you certain you want me to leave you alone out here?
Roan's eyes search the warped horizon of the Ladan. Pytha stands behind him before my personal shuttle.
Until the wedding, Ajax will look for any opportunity.
Ajax is on Earth.
It must be done.
But Dominus...
He looks again at the feast. In the middle of the desert, upon a great dune, two broad couches of purple silk and raw nebula wood lie on either side of a long table, weighed down by a feast to feed 20.
Are you certain this is safe?
I don't believe my guest would respect safe.
Are you certain he will come?
I look out at the desert.
The better question is, if he is even real.
What do you mean?
Never you mind. Come back for me in 2 hours, I say. If I'm in more than one piece, collect my remains and fire them into the sun. I hand him a data drop.
My will.
Glirastes has a copy too.
Glirastes, who took the day to scout locations for a new library in Pan, would be furious if he knew that I was out here in the desert instead of overseeing the rebuilding of Tyche.
But despite what he thinks, he needn't know all my affairs. After a hesitation, Roan salutes and enters the shuttle. Pytha remains behind.
"Do you know what you're doing?" she asks. "He is not a sane man."
"Are you afraid of him, Pytha?"
"Yes."
"So is everyone." She understands as she remembers her advice in the fitting bay of the Anihilo, but she does not like it. Soon the shuttle is out of sight. I sit on one of the couches and sip chilled wine. With Kalindora's revelations, my inner world is in shambles. But the strings of oaths, fidelity, and history that conspired to strangle me are cut. I know the rules now, Grandmother. There are none. At last I feel free. Here in the aftermath of the Battle of Mercury, I sense a great horizon of opportunity. The free legions are broken. Darrow is in flight. Luna is run by a madman. Mars trampled by obsidians. Earth fallen to the rim and the society. That sense of insignificance and guilt I permitted Cassius to instill within me has not disappeared, but remains in the back of my mind as a reminder of the fate one can accept if he lets the mercy of others define him. Darrow's mercy, all those years ago, Cassius's mercy in serving as my protector, Kalindora's last testament, all of it rooted in some vain attempt to rekindle honour they long ago sacrificed for one reason or another. The same honour Lorne preached after painting a legend in blood, the same selfish honour Romulus preserved before abandoning his people at their most dire hour, the same honour that led to my engagement with Atalantia, and let me delude myself into thinking that honour was about personal sacrifice. My grandmother was the most cunning person I ever met, but still she was wrong. She thought there was no place for honour in the world. I cannot agree completely. It was her cruelty that chipped away at the foundation of her power and poisoned all who served her. It is Atalantia's cruelty which makes me pray to people like her. Is it honourable to kill her for my mother? Honourable to thrust us into civil war? Honourable to fulfil my pledge to submit to her every whim? Honourable to be trapped between her legs night after night so that gold might have unity? I think not. I think, as with all things, honour is best appreciated in moderation, as is cruelty. After all, there is no crime with a court. The whine of grav boots disturbs my silence. My guest arrives. He is no figment of my imagination. He is real and dreadful. His Martian armour radiates heat in the sun until he steps into the cool provided by the pulse bubble I have prepared. He looks over the table from beneath the horns of his helm.
A mirage of no finer quality has ever graced this wasted tomb to ambition and martial men,
he declares through his helmet.
Libations of Elysian Red, Terran Bordeaux, Mercurian Soletto, with gustatio of raw oysters, wine-steamed sow's udders, candied pecans, olives, azaroles, and medlars and juscelum. A mense prime of walnut and herb-stuffed thrush and paschal bell, garlic venison, honey drizzled wild boar stuffed with dried figs, garum sauce, and do mine eyes deceive me?
His giant helmet inspects the centerpiece.
A hare decorated with the wings of a peacock. No, 'tis but a noble Pegasus, and not to be forgotten, a mense secunde of Looney's iced frise, tactoon, chocolate pecans, and white pudding.
He looks up at me, that metal helmet impassive and dreadful.
Now this is a cena, a feast fit for a conqueror, a gourmand, a student of Apicius himself, and set before such grandeur.
He waves at the desert.
Yes! Yes, I at last am paid the respect I am due.
If I have learned anything, it is that one does not simply summon the Minotaur, I reply. If you would please do me the honour of joining me, I believe we have common interests to discuss. He doffs his helmet and reclines on the couch. His face is that of an evil angel, masculine, suspicious, amused, and tan from what I assume he considers his vacation in the desert. He peers under the table with mocking eyes.
Gelding or stallion, my good man?
Were you not there when I was tortured? I ask.
I was mocking your union with the Fury, not your time with the Gorgons, he says. How well I know the unlimited depths of her voracious appetites! Though I hear Ajax has filled the holes my absence has left. Now you seek to do the same.
He grins.
But yes, I was outside the cave. I waited, listening via my sophisticated drone hardware to the ministrations of the Fear Knight. I confess, I considered striking when you purloined him for your own purposes. Such opportunity seldom presents itself with that most dangerous game. But the show, oh, the show was far too interesting to interrupt. The flight across the desert will be held forever in amber in the hollows of my mind.
He leans forwards, very sincere.
I do apologize for claiming you lacked theatricality. It is always a pleasure to be wrong.
He strokes his purple chest plate. The grapevines of his home in Thessalonica stretch to a horizon gilded with silver sunlight.
Alas, my armour died from that infernal electromagnetic pulse. I have yet to divine why its shielding failed to that device. I have many questions for Glerastes, many questions to which I must have answers.
They can wait. I confess I am surprised to find that you did not go witness the attack on Earth. Most of your quarry were in play.
My path to my quarry runs through this moment, he says. And after the ash rain?
He looks offended.
After a cup of 21 Thessalonican Chianti, one does not rinse one's mouth with sangria. I saw 30 million men in mortal conflict. Oh, my need for violent theatre is quite sated. In any matter, it was a pathetic affair. The Vox fleet gazed lazily from their perch above Luna as Atalantia feigned a retreat and led Earth's fleet straight into a rim attack group. The only thing of interest would have been to see the son of Romulus lead his commandos to the surface to lower the shield generators. What a specimen is he! Perhaps we have a new lead on stage.
Well, I hope you still have room for theatre of a different sort, I say. A great mechanical groan tears the sky, frightening the dishes and the sand of the dune into frantic palpitations. the sound rushes toward us in a flood of decibels, till it seems that the torrent of it will swallow the dune. And then it is overhead, and Apollonius grins. A great mass blocks the sky. Slowly a thin wedge of blue elongates in the darkness, as two vast legs of stone pass through the midday heat. They are but the lowermost extremities of the ancient mass borne aloft by six heavy cargo haulers. The haulers creep across the sky and soon begin to lower their charge. The statue is immense, its face riven by the ravages of desert storms and chipped by the target practice of rising riflemen, sneers at us as if to say, "You think yourself worthy?" The stone lips of my first ancestor, Selenius Auloon, curl in contempt as he resumes his rightful place under the sun. The haulers release the towing bonds. The sovereign sways. His stone feet sink into the sand. Dust from his recent grave shudders from his shoulders, nose, and the creases of his robe to form a billowing cloak. When the dust clears, he is still and solemn amongst his mighty fellows. 20 sovereigns stand in the desert to form a circle 10 kilometres in circumference. It is theatre fit for the Minotaur. He claps his hands like a delighted, monstrous child. In each individual one might find vanity, cruelty, pride, all or any of the excesses and deficiencies of the Homo aureat, I say. But together they stand for something more than their individual parts. Each was a custodian for his or her time, forming a chain of order that guided the human spirit from the dark ages of war through 700 years of expansion and growth. They erred in the end, each small corruption spawning one more evolved and potent, until the natural evolution of that corruption induced decay and torpor, and the death of all empires, aristocracy. In that decay, how could they not expect a new predator to rise?
"Darrow," Apollonius smiles, "my ultimate prey."
"Indeed, it will not be like them. In their shadow I will create something greater, something stronger, something fairer. But it seems nothing fair is made by fairness."
"I care nothing for fairness, nor any of your pretentious-minded virtues," he declares with a wave of an armored hand. "They are for simpletons. No morality constrains my limitless mind, save my word. You know what I want, little paramour."
Atalantia, Ajax, Atlas, and then Darrow.
"And the mind's eye," he says with hunger.
"I can give you that, and the rest, but I need something in return." He leans his huge mass back.
"Dare I ask, what must I sacrifice upon the altar for my heart's delight?"
"Nothing." His eyes narrow. "You have been mistreated, misunderstood, and betrayed. You have watched me suffer the same. We are alike, Apollonius. It seems a pity that we should be so alone." I lean back and sip my wine. "May I ask, do you care at all for rule?"
"It bores me, as does this conversation."
"I know how you will die, Apollonius."
"Ooh, much better. How?"
"You will die the apex predator of this world, having stained it with your legend and the blood of your foes, so that when, in old age, you sit beneath the sycamores of Thessalonica to die, you know you venture into the void not burdened by your conquests, not fettered with responsibility of rule, but light as the ether that binds the heavens, as you drink your Thessalonican red and reminisce of the enemies you cut to their knees." He is enchanted.
"And with whom will I reminisce?"
"The ally who asks for nothing but your blade and cunning mind, who takes the burden of rule from your shoulders
and exempts you from fealty, from all oaths, save the one where you gave your word to stand beside him against the worlds. I extend a hand. With a smile he seizes it in his immense gauntlet. His eyes blaze with excitement.
"To the trembling of the worlds," he whispers.
Together we gaze at the graveyard of tyrants. In the days before the rising, the people of Mercury would come to this place and follow the statue's extended arms, which pointed at midnight to Luna, to remind them where power truly resided. When I found the statues, they lay fallow in the dirt, covered with war machines and blood, their arms pointing in all directions. Now, no longer a bickering mass in a shared grave, they stand together again. They point together toward a small patch of the sky, where at noon a distant sphere, appearing no larger than a small grain of sand, circles the sun. They point to remind my guest and all of Mercury our task is yet unfinished. They point toward Mars.